Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Happy Monday, Dr. Paul. How are
you? Is it Monday again?
It is Monday again. Yes.
Weekends go fast. Have you ever noticed that? We've got to get back to our job.
Exactly.
Our job, sometimes I think, what is our job? And, of course, for me, it's one thing. It might be a little bit differently for you. But I think ultimately what we're trying to do is get the truth out. First, we do everything we can to possibly seek out the truth because nobody has a monopoly over that. But I think the biggest shortcomings in humankind has been the shortage of curiosity.
Yeah.
Most people are never curious. Most people go along. It gives them this, an advantage, though, the people who are, you know, very sympathetic and thoughtful about ideas and how the world really works, you know, they still have a chance to have an influence. But the big problem is it works in the opposite way, too. The bad ideas get out there. And right now, I think there's a lot of bad ideas floating around the internet and floating around the television companies. And there's a little bit of that in Washington, D.C., a lot of bad ideas. And they're all over the university. So we have to try our best to figure it out. And we've had a challenge. Of course, we've spent a lot of time on foreign policy. And that's been good. And we still will continue on foreign policy. But we've also, in these last several months, have tried to deal with the issues that the people are most concerned about. One was the onset of the recession, which is very, very serious, but it's totally ignored right now because that is taken care of by trillions of dollars. And evidently, people trust the government, trillions and trillions of dollars, that I'll take care of the economy. But the other thing, of course, that came up was the coronavirus deal. It's still here. It's getting worse, although the sides are changing a little bit. There's more questions being asked, and I think that is very good. And then on top of that, we have the radical Marxists, you know, gaining some strength on the streets. And my one conclusion from that, Daniel, is that they're more powerful than I realized. I knew they were there. I knew they were a danger, but it looks like their infiltration is unbelievable when it comes to the rolling over and being unified, you know, from city councils all the way up to the United Nations, and they've been orchestrating a certain position. This is the time to take over. People will have to sacrifice their liberties. And we do have a spokesman for the opposition, but I think he might be losing a little bit of credibility, and that's Fauci. And he's been around a lot, but there's some good things happening there because he doesn't have as much credibility. He's losing credibility. He's lost credibility with the president, and that's good. And just recently, he does not use Fauci for a spokesman. He's still in the administration, so to speak. But just the other day, Trump canceled a public speaking engagement that he has. So it's lining up. But what we have talked about so much has been the fallacies about reporting. And because statistics are important, people say, you know, the death rate is skyrocketing, you know. And so people panic, and they have a normal human reaction to that because the officials are telling us this is deadly and people are dying. But they're getting the information from a from an organization that hardly anybody trusts, and that's the government. And when you come up with believing the scientists, which should be more credible, we find out that they've merged. The scientists have joined the politicians.
Yeah.
You don't have a good scientific, we do have it, but we don't hear from them. There's still some good scientific information. But the Faucis of the world and the Bill Gates of the world have come over and they've taken over the message that is pumped out by the politicians. But we still have high hopes because there are some good people out there, and we have praised the governor of South Dakota, and we need more people like that. And let's work on that. But this, look at a few things on on what's going on. We mentioned in the title, you know, that there was an interview over the weekend with Trump and Wallace. And I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did watch the part where Trump spoke up about the discrepancy in and the erroneous way of reporting the statistics, that anybody that has a positive test, or anybody who was supposed to have a positive test, or anybody that concocted the image of it, that's what you count, and boy, they're skyrocketing.
Yeah.
You measure something that doesn't exist, you can get any number you want. And of course, those numbers are skyrocketing. But that came up in the discussion with Wallace, and Wallace didn't like it, you know, what Trump was saying. And Trump says, this is the part I liked about it. He says, instead of looking at cases, why don't you look at the deaths?
Yeah.
And I think that's something we've talked about a lot.
Yeah, I think he was very forceful, and Chris Wallace kept trying to catch him off guard. And then, you know, people that hated Trump were happy with how Chris Wallace behaved during the interview. Trump supporters were unhappy with a very competitive tone. And I don't remember anything when Obama was president that was really like that, Dr. Paul. And we watched most of it, but it was interesting how Fox produced that segment. They would give you a section where Chris Wallace would interview President Trump, and then they would cut from the interview and show some things on their own screen, fact-checking the president as they went.
Right.
That seems unprecedented to me and unusual. I do want to mention, though, before we go further, that being a Monday, we will be thanking our Super Chat participants at the end of today's show. These are people that kick in a few dollars during the week as part of the Super Chat to help us keep the show going. And we're deeply grateful for those people. But it was an interesting interview. And as you point out, Trump, maybe he's watching the show, you never know. But he said what we've been pounding the table saying for weeks now. All of a sudden, it's cases instead of deaths that they're counting, because deaths went like this, which they continue to do with very, very minor fluctuations. But cases now, because they are ramping up the testing, have increased quite a bit. But what they call cases are not what you traditionally call cases. You feeling sick, you go to the doctor tests you, you got a case of the flu, you got a case of the mumps, you got a case of this. These are, and Trump points it out in the interview when Wallace was being so combative, he said, yeah, but most of these people are getting better in a day. They're young people, these cases. You know, we're not seeing what we saw. And it was Wallace's attempt to blame the whole thing on the president. Trust me, there's plenty that we blame on the president, but it was an interesting exchange.
Absolutely it was, and it caught the attention of a lot of people. I have a headline here I want to read and get a comment from you. It says, Fauci urges governments to be as forceful as possible on mask rules. Well, there's been a lot of force being used. Sometimes you don't know who's the most forceful. Sometimes the people can't figure it out, because sometimes a suggestion becomes the law of the land and you can have all kinds of things happen to you. And there's the social pressure to put on. That might be the strongest thing, that your neighbors and your friends are saying, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But Fauci's been on both sides of this issue. Sometimes he said it was, doesn't do anything. But now, be as forceful as possible. Force is as forceful as possible by government. Gets my gander up, because that's exactly the opposite of protect people's liberty, let them figure things out. That's what we need.
Yeah, when someone in his position, and unfortunately it's undeserved that he's so respected, because we know a little bit about his history, we've talked about it on the program, his history with HIV and other things, but when he says that officials should be as forceful as possible, he may not mean it this way, but to me it sounds like the police are out there, they're roughing you up. You got people yelling at you. I saw an article on Yahoo yesterday. It's okay to yell at people who don't have a mask on. It's okay to harass them. But this is the funny thing. Fauci is freaking out over the mask over just a little while ago. He said nobody should be wearing a mask. So was he wrong then or wrong now? It's a good question. Regardless of that, we got to be forceful. But look at the next clip. This is also over the weekend. You got to be forceful. Force them to wear the mask. But look at this. Dr. Fauci opposes controlled study on effectiveness of masks. Well, why? Well, what's the problem? Why does he, if you got to be forceful and you got to force people to wear them, shouldn't we know if they work? He said, no, we can't really do that, because if you do a test on masks, you're going to have some people without masks on who might get infected with the virus. Well, that's kind of happening already. So it makes it a little bit less credible when he says these two things.
But doesn't this confirm my suggestion of the scientists becoming politicians? This statement literally says, I don't even consider science anymore, as if he really ever did, because he was probably always in the business of politics. But he confirms it by saying, we can't have a controlled study. In medicine, that's what you always do because of the placebo effect and different reasons why you have to have some type of control. This may be a little bit more complex, but nevertheless, it is something that people know about. And I think that Fauci has, taken this position where nobody knows quite sure what he'll say tomorrow. I have one blog, the blogger, I think it was on one of these articles I have. It caught my attention. It's not very long. He defines himself as Restore America. He says, Tony Phony Fauci is an absolute fraud, and his world is about to come crashing down. Is that an overstatement, do you think, or could that be true?
Well, it does make me wonder, actually, some of the stuff that Fauci said over the weekend, if he's maybe smoking something a little stronger than it should be. Let's look at this next clip. I had a hard time understanding what he meant when he said this. Anthony Fauci praises New York's coronavirus response. They did it correctly. This is what he actually said this. New York's seen 400,000 cases, 28,000 deaths, the highest death rate in the country, and one of the highest in the world. And Fauci says they did a great job. Well, let's look at this next one. Does he think this is a great job too? More than 40% of U.S. coronavirus deaths are linked to nursing homes. And this is in New York. You had a massive, massive forced killing, I would say, of older people in nursing homes. Did he do that? Did they do that right in New York? You got to wonder, what is he thinking when he says something? How about South Dakota did something right? They're the ones that did everything right because they have virtually no deaths. They have shut nothing down. Yeah, he's jumped the shark.
I'm gonna read a title here that has a medical twist to it. And I'm not going to claim that I am a final word on this because I think there's room for scientific debate about it. And I think these things are in flux. But the headline is very adamant about the danger. Can you get the coronavirus twice? Because that will serve the interests of the people who want to create fear. Yeah. And it's in there, the way it's written up in other places, say, you can get it twice. You don't have any immunity. This idea that you get infection, you get immunity. Well, from my memory of going to medical school, is when you get a disease, you more or less do get permanent immunity, especially childhood diseases and all, and they're very specific, and you don't have to worry about it. I tend to think that's the possibility here, but I also think there can be a raising a question because viruses can change, and they put the coronavirus in the category of a cold virus.
Yeah.
So if you have a cold, people get colds. That's been known throughout history, and people would say, why don't they have a virus? Why don't they have a vaccine for cold? It's because it's something that comes and changes, and the individual, depending on their immune system, handles it differently. But they keep coming back, and it's different, so it's not practical to have it. So maybe there is some truth to this, but this would be... If it is true, it's saying, this is acting more like a cold virus and would support some of the arguments against the hysteria that's going on, that you have to close down the world and make people look like zombies and walking every street in the world, and trying to protect yourself against it. But I think if anybody has an infection and probably coronavirus, you're going to get some immunity from it. But I think they haven't finally decided that. But that to me is an opinion which could be challenged. But I think the whole idea is: do you think the vaccine is going to magically clarify all this? the vaccines, they're getting ready to give them, and the disease is questionable how serious it is and where is it going to be in 6 months when it comes up. All we know is there's been a lot of money appropriated for this, and a lot of people honestly and sincerely are waiting anxiously because we have terrorized the whole country and the whole world, and Boy, if Gates could just get it out there. Except, don't let Gates go to India.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a very good reputation there.
No, he doesn't. And it's hard to argue with people with just the numbers. You know, this viral outbreak has killed just under 4,000 people in Texas. And again, we've said this before, it's a tragedy. But in 2018, the viral outbreak killed 11,000 people. That's three times as many people, and we didn't shut down. In 2017, I think it was 10,000 people. So these things do happen. Hundreds of thousands of people do die from the flu virus and from cold viruses every year, and it's nothing new. But what we have different here now is this now of this rush to test because they want to get the fear out because of cases rather than deaths. Let's look at this next clip, Dr. Paul. This is just from a couple of days ago on MSM. And this is something I know you've been talking about quite a bit, too. Half of CDC coronavirus test kits are inaccurate, study finds. Half of them are inaccurate. I think it says 30% give false positives, 20% give false negatives is what this particular survey study found. But we do know that these tests are wildly inaccurate now. And we've even seen, I think you wrote about it this week too, about some of these states are having to revise their numbers because they put things in it that shouldn't be in it and taking things out that shouldn't be. You started out with this famous case that everyone was talking about over the weekend with a person in his 20s who died of coronavirus, except that he died of a motorcycle accident.
That is right. And that's interesting too because, you know, he had the test. Well, we know why he died. He was in a bad motorcycle accident.
Yeah.
But then you go back to the question that you're raising, and we talk about it is how accurate was the virus test? You know, and how, maybe they talked to a relative. Oh, yeah, he was coughing and sneezing and having all kinds of things, and that might be distracted on his bicycle or something like that. Okay, we'll make it down. Or they did a test. Well, if they did a test, the test could be a false positive.
Yeah.
But so many people who have been counted have not had positive tests. People go into the hospital and they have pneumonia and they have conditions that make them more prone to pneumonia. But then they do the coronavirus test and it comes up positive and everybody gets pretty nervous about that. And then that might be done in a clinic someplace, and they bring it in, and as they're admitted, the pneumonia has to be treated. They admit it, and they do a coronavirus test again, then it's negative. Well, just in a short period of time. So there's no way that people even can say, well, I know which one works the best.
Yeah.
And they don't know. And there were some times when I've heard this where somebody would be telling me something like this, that they claim that they had a coronavirus, they put them in for some other reason, and they assume that they have coronavirus. I said, did they repeat the test?
Yeah.
But repeating tests that are unreliable doesn't help solve the problem either. So it's one that has been so politicized, and the one thing is that they this is not very scientific.
Yeah, it's politics. But, there is a lot of revisionism that's going on now. We saw Fauci praising New York. One of the worst death rates in the world was New York. Well, remember the New Jersey governor? Remember when they asked him, hey, did you think about the Bill of Rights when you canceled all these things? And I didn't really think about that at all. Good job. Here's, Governor Murphy. Don't like my leadership? Go down to Georgia and see how that feels. He's talking about coronavirus leadership. Well, that's kind of an interesting challenge, Mr. Governor. Let's have a look at how New Jersey did with coronavirus. Let's take a look at that next one. New Jersey coronavirus deaths increased to 15,700. With 176,000 cases. Okay, must have been much better than Georgia if he's holding up Georgia as an example of a failure. Well, here's Georgia, only 3,173 deaths, 20% of New Jersey's deaths. So I don't know if that's a good idea, claiming that you should go down to Georgia if you don't like how miserably bad New Jersey, which also put all the seniors into the old folks' home and had them all die.
All right, here's another article I want to talk about a little bit, but they were talking about these tests and all, and the wearing of the mask. Who in in March said, excuse me, there is no specific evidence to suggest that the wearing a mask by the mass population has any potential benefit. But then down the next paragraph, a few weeks ago, the WHO changed his advice to say It advises that governments should encourage the general public to wear masks where there is widespread transmission and physical distances is difficult, and such a and on public transport, in shops and other confined crowded. It doesn't mandate anything, but the mandate is so irrelevant too, because they don't have legal authority, but they have something else that they have grabbed the moral authority. They become the moralist, that if you don't do it, you're some type of a heathen. You just hate people.
Yeah.
You're committing a murder and all this. If you go out and you don't have your mask on, it turns neighborhoods, friends, and people against each other because, people get frightened. And fear is a terribly difficult disease to have to control. Fear and a hysteria, and if you combine it, if you get people real fearful and then they get hysterical about it, and the government on purpose is encouraging that, we end up with a mess. And yet we find these bits and pieces of people changing their mind and the attitude. Unfortunately, this attitude went the wrong way. We would like to see people changing their mind and saying, we really don't need to do this, that the cost in life and limb is much greater by lockdown than it is by letting people, just work their way through this with local common sense and local control and a mask if you want to use them and can use them at certain times.
Yeah.
And also, quarantines at times. There's certainly a room for that. But this whole idea that it's all or nothing and it's all done by force and they just jump back and forth. These are authoritarians. If they can make one position using authority, next month they can change it. It's not because there was scientific evidence. It's just because, the mood is now, and I better watch out. It doesn't look like it's quite as bad, so I better change my position. But the one thing that they don't change is their goal of getting more power, more authoritarianism into the hands of government officials and the politicians, because now we have seen some two-bit politicians on the television that have been all around. And, I think they sort of enjoy the attention and the authority that they have. And yet that's opposite of what a free society is about, because, yes, problems are dealt with, but they're dealt with in a completely different way, and it's done through voluntarism and agreements between two individuals. And it's not a perfect system, but believe me, what we have now is very imperfect.
Yeah, and that's a good segue into this idea that the elites really declared war on the rest of us in the U.S., and that's essentially the theme of an article that we have up on the Ron Paul Institute website today, ronpaulinstitute.org, written by Professor Codavia, who's a long time, he's a professor emeritus at Boston University, and a very deep thinker, and it's called The COVID Coup, and it really is worth reading. And here's one thing that stuck out in the article. It's a long article, Dr. Paul, as you know, because we both read it over the weekend. But he makes a very good point here. He talked about locking down the country ostensibly to save it from COVID-19 offered a near monopoly on communications. And that seems so critical if you want to look at it as a coup against the people. Churches were shut down. Trump's rallies were shut down. The meetings of different clubs and businesses and friends where you get together and talk, those were all shut down because of social distancing and rules and et cetera, et cetera. And he said, here's a quote, "Without face-to-face contact, television became the chief means by which communication took place. But it was a one-way communication whose programming and corporate advertising immediately began telling the people the joys of obedience. We are all in this together, quote, alone together. It reeks of Orwell," he said. And that's fascinating, because preventing people from getting together and saying, hey, this COVID thing, it doesn't seem to add up. when you prevent that and all you have is the hysterical news media pounding into your brain constantly, it has an effect.
A lot of effect on general health, mental health, and physical health, because you can't always separate mental health and physical health, but that it certainly has been a problem and an economic disaster, this whole idea of separation and not letting people go out and wearing masks. The mask, to me, is a terrible, terrible symbol. And yet it's something, it's like so many things in life. There's good parts of it, and when it's misused, there's bad parts of it. But to me, it's a symbol of government authority used recklessly in order to enhance their power. And that's quite a bit different than they are caring about people who are sick. This is the last headline that I want to read. And this comes from Peter Hitchens.
Yeah, good guy.
And it says, face masks turn us into voiceless submissives, and it's not science forcing us to wear them. It's politics.
Yeah.
And I sure agree with that. It's not science, and the pseudoscientists are all over the place. And what generally is the sad part about it is it's an all or nothing. If somebody comes along and they accept the science, maybe sincerely, then they think everything else we might say is absolutely wrong.
Yeah.
Because there's a disagreement. But that's why you want diversity of thought, a different kind of diversity than some people talk about. But that's what life is all about, is diversity and picking and choosing and making these decisions and getting away from, and the word I use an awful lot for solving problems is authoritarianism.
Yeah.
I think there's liberty and authoritarianism. Authoritarianism includes all of it, you know, all the kinds of socialism and economic interventionism and inflationism and all this, it includes that. And yet human nature, I think, has always struggled between the two, because I think there's tremendous natural desire to be free and self-reliant and taking care of oneself. And there's also a natural desire of being taken care of. And some people, you know, don't pay a whole lot of attention to the thinking about that and just go along or get along and hope they can get lunch next week.
Yeah.
You know? But I think there's the big difference. Of course, we're strongly on the side of people, individuals, being responsible, taking care of themselves, doing things voluntarily. And I think this whole mess would have been serious, but not catastrophic. They took a serious infection that people were paying attention to, but something that should never have been so catastrophic, and it ends up on an attack on liberty. And that's what I think Peter did such a good job on,
good article,
and making that point.
And that article is on Lou Rockwell, if people want to read that. Well, I'm gonna do one little tiny piece and then close out. And the next clip is just something I know that you're gonna be shocked if you haven't already seen this, Dr. Paul. If we can put up that next clip. Kentucky couple under house arrest after refusing to quarantine. The woman got tested for coronavirus because she was going to go visit her parents. So she wanted to make sure she had it or didn't, and she tested positive. Her husband, I believe he was, or certainly a person living with her, he tested negative. They said, we're not going to be forced to stay home. They put ankle bracelets on them and forced him, put him under house arrest, forced him to stay in their house. And that's crazy. I'm going to do a couple of quick things that you are not going to see in the media, and these are some great work being done on Twitter. Let's look at the next clip really quick. This is Harris County ICU and general bed data through 7/19. You did see an increase. You're seeing a steady decrease in ICU and general bed occupation over time. And in Florida as well, and this is, I got this from Alex Berenson, who is widely respected. He's done a great job on Twitter. He's a former New York Times writer, and I've referenced him several times. But he has the numbers out, and I don't have a graph, but these are his numbers. You can look him up on Twitter. Interestingly enough, he's looking in Florida, 150,000 positive tests in 2 weeks. Huge number. And effectively, there's no change in either total hospitalizations or ICU use statewide. And he took this data from the Florida State Agency for Healthcare Administration. It's on the official website. July 5th survey, 14,945 available beds. July 19th survey, 14,482 available beds. Virtually no change. July 5th, ICU available beds, 1,246. 7/19, July 19th, ICU available beds, 1,146, just 100 less beds in the midst of this huge spike, they're saying. That's why we're not seeing a lot being talked about now. And if you look up Arizona bed use, Dr. Paul, in the hospitals, it's cratering completely. So if there was a spike or if there was an increase, it appears at least to be decreasing significantly now. And you mentioned this in your column, I believe, that a lot of these deaths were backdated from from May and everything. So there is good news on the horizon, but as Dr. Paul suggested earlier, it does make you wonder what they're going to throw at us next if these even these cases start looking better.
Very good. I think we're in a crisis of integrity. I mean, we have the lack of integrity. People are taking advantage of it to advance their agenda. We're seeing that, you know, really in the streets now, all of a sudden, you know, the infiltration of the radical Marxist movement is much greater than I expected. And finding the people that you can believe in, believe is one of the biggest challenges that we have. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. We're going to continue to do this, and we continue want to thank you for all that you do to support us. And we, quite frankly, feel good about what's happening in the sense that we are getting a lot of information out and we're getting the support. But we also understand the difficulty and the challenge that we have. But I figure that's been that way for a long time. And I think we are at a crossroads in this country on which way we're going to go. I don't think that all of a sudden we're going to wave a wand and patch up the system that we have. The republic will be restored, and the whole system is going to be cleansed, and we're going to have free markets and balanced budget. That's not going to happen. But those ideas are alive and well. They're endorsed by a lot of people, and a lot of young people join in those efforts. So time will tell, but if the ideas are not there, and if they're not infiltrating and spreading around, not much will happen. And when an idea whose time has come, you can't stop it. And I see where it's moving. And I talk to a lot of people still, even with the inability to go to the meetings and travel, that we do visit with a lot of people through the communications of the social media. So I am very pleased with what is happening. So we're going to continue this effort. But once again, thank you very much for being with us at the Liberty Report.